TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
NFL is back.
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take a rip triple jump. We're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this afternoon at tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joined in studio by my good friend Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock. He'll be joining us momentarily. He's on his way back from a softball game.
Yeah, Richie will be in here pretty soon.
Yeah.
But it's me and you. We can get to know each other a little better, maybe.
I'm good. I mean, we got to begin with. There's only one thing that are on Winnipeg sports fans' minds to start with, and that is the championship won last night by the Winnipeg Goldeyes.
Right.
The American Association champion, Winnipeg Goldeyes. Congratulations to them. We're going to be joined in a mere couple of minutes by Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Goldeyes. As you know, it's not every day. It's been 18 long years since we were able to discuss a championship team hailing from the city of Winnipeg. Richie, how is your softball team doing? Are you going to be a championship team tonight?
We were tied when I left, Drew, so we'll see what happens there.
Okay, fair enough. That's reasonable. That's my headphones you just turned up there. Thank you. Anyways, we're going to be joined by Paul Edmonds live in Wichita coming up in mere minutes. He's going to join us. Later on in the program, Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us, talk Winnipeg Jets, talk Evander Kane. No news on that front yet. And then later on, we're going to be joined by Jack Edwards, the play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins on the NESN network. The Bruins have made a ton of news so far, really in the last 24, 48 hours. Another signing by the Bruins.
Yep.
Milan Lucic, 3 years, $18 million. We have you covered on all of the signings throughout the NHL. Everything to do with the CBA discussions, of course. There's, you know, less than 12 hours to go now. I mean, I think it's a foregone conclusion for everybody that there's going to be a lockout. But less than 12 hours to go. 10:59 p.m. Winnipeg time tonight. It will officially mark the latest NHL work stoppage, of which there have been a ton. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Paul Edmonds, championship broadcaster of the Winnipeg Goldeyes. How are you feeling this afternoon, Paul?
It's like a bar mitzvah without the 13-year-old, boy.
but I hope just...
I am great. I am absolutely top shelf. I mean, I think I saw the sun come up this morning, but not good or not bad. We're traveling home, and boy, it's a great feeling. Long time coming, and a lot of people and a lot of fans and a lot of sports fans in southern Manitoba and the capital region sharing this today. Boy, it's been a long time. I've never been a champion in my playing career, and then neither in my broadcasting career. And this is a different feeling, but it's all good, and I'm going to soak it up like a sponge.
That's great, Paul. It's amazing to think, I mean, the number of months ago when the Goldeyes open house, mm-hmm. we were there broadcasting live. That was really the start of the Goldeyes season. You know, and here we are today, you know, broadcasting, you know, or talking about the championship the Goldeyes won. Did you think back then, a number of months ago, this was in the cards for this team?
You know what, Drew? Honestly, I think you always go into a season and you look at the team and you go, okay, I think we got a chance to win. And then you got to kind of play out the chapters of the book, right? And it's 100 games, and there's ups and downs and player movement and transactions and volatility and weird things happen. And, you know, you wonder, as you go through little segments, you go, oh, I think we got a team to do it. And then you think, oh, I don't know, something's going to happen here, and it's going to go the wrong way, and it could go south real quick. But I think, honestly, as I said to Rick in the postgame show, and I don't know if you guys caught it last night, but there was something that I started to feel was going upward for this team in that last road trip the 3 in Gary and the 4 in St. Paul. And, you know, they dropped John Weber. They picked up Barbaro Canizares. And they won 2 or 3 in Gary, 3 or 4 in St. Paul. They come home with a 3-game lead in the wild card, and you think, boy, this is maybe we're on the cusp of something special here. And as it turned out, they didn't have a great homestand there, but they managed to clinch at home against Fargo, and then they roll into the playoffs, and momentum as the games went along, as you guys know. And well, what a special feeling. And those 3 nights in Winnipeg were second to none that I can ever remember at home. And 16,000 people came out and were on their feet for the last outs in every one of those games. So to answer your question, I think for me, you always hope, you always believe that a team is assembled with the idea of winning a championship. But it wasn't until about the last 2 weeks of the season that I felt that something was maybe going to happen favorably for the organization and its fans.
Paul, the word you said there in that answer was momentum, and that seems to be the key to all sports, but even really baseball. You see it in major leagues, you see it in the American Association, you see it in any baseball level. It's kind of hard to quantify, but is it as much performance as it is a feeling amongst the players?
Yeah, I think, Richie, once they start to think and that they've got it on their side, it's a big snowball effect. You know, I think in the first 5 games says it all. They had to come back in all 5 mm-hmm. of those games to win games. And when you start to develop that, you do it in the first couple, you start to really believe that even though you're down by 1 or 2, or in the case maybe of game 2 in the series in the championship final, you're down by 3, okay, no problem, we're going to get them. We've still got lots of time to go. So, yeah, momentum is a big key in it. Once I think it starts to permeate that dressing room in a positive manner, it's very difficult for the opposition to overcome when a team starts to develop it.
Paul, what about the inroads that the Goaliers have made by winning the championship? I mean, I can speak to it. We played our last baseball game of the regular season on Wednesday. We went out for drinks after. A bunch of the teams go out for drinks everywhere, and the Goaliers game was on the TV in the bar, and people were watching, and people were talking about it. How much does that playoff run have to spread the enthusiasm about the Goaliers and, you know, have that snowball effect to next season?
Well, I think the timing couldn't be any more better. I mean, you know, we're looking at probably not playing hockey until, you know, maybe Remembrance Day or Christmas, which is unfortunate. The football club has certainly had a bit of a downturn this year as well. So people are looking to grab and grasp onto something. And, you know, Goaliers are always there. And I said this in the post-game show last night, too. Now, you go to a Goaliers game in June or July or to some degree in August, and, you know, it's about watching the Civ or Peg City Schultz or some on-field promo or something in the stands, and you walk away and you had a good time and it was a good evening out, and you know, you're able to take your family and all that. But in late August and September, it became about the baseball, and that was the best thing for me too. I think we've really grown up as a baseball community. I think people really understand the game. You have to remember that for 24 years we did not have professional baseball from 1971 until 1994. So there was a lot of generations that missed the game and being able to see it live and understand it other than watching it on TV and a little bit of the Blue Jays coverage that certain stations have had in our market over the years. So I think that's important. I think it's important that one of the franchises in our city has won a championship. And I think the timing couldn't be better based on what's going on in our sporting community. And the Goaliers are just part of it. And boy, they delivered, and it was a lot of fun, and I know a lot of people were really interested in what was going on and really following, and the passion that I got back from Twitter and texts mm-hmm. and emails, it meant something to people, and I'm really glad it meant a lot to them.
I think we may have lost Paul there.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll try and get Paul back on the line so he can finish that statement. But, I mean, you sort of have 2 things last night. You have the a less than stellar performance, let's call it, by our football team.
That was a joke.
Yeah, I know. I'm being sort of tongue-in-cheek when I say less than stellar. Yeah. But everybody almost simultaneously went from sort of keeping one eye on the Gold Eyes and one eye on the Bombers. And then it was two eyes squarely focused on the Gold Eyes as they began to look more and more likely that they were going to wrap up the championship in Wichita last night. And, you know, there's a lot of personal affinity I found on Twitter for Paul himself.
Yep.
The passion that he exudes when he calls the game, you know, and I mean, there's nobody that's been around this team more than Paul Edmonds over the years. He is really the voice and almost the face of the franchise. And, you know, just to see him finally, you know, get the final out last night in Wichita and bring the championship home, it really lifted a malaise, let's say, that was hanging over our sports teams for the last, you know, two decades or so.
Very eloquently said, Drew. Paul's a class act, and it's funny. Paul mentioned that there's always been love for Gold Eyes, and they do have absolutely, you know, first-class fans. And, you know, Drew and I were talking about this off-air. We were both there in 94 for the championship. I'm not sure if Richie was there in 94 when they used to play at the Winnipeg Stadium.
I used to always go to the games, but I wasn't at the championship game.
The Gold Eyes game, the Gold Eyes team has really, really matured, and he said it. They've really come of age, the fans, that is. And, you know, they're the only franchise that's won a championship you know, since basically 1990 when the Bombers won. But, you know, it's great for the Gold Eyes. You know, it's awesome that Paul Edmonds came on. But, you know, with the way the Bombers are playing with the NHL lockout, this is great news. And I know that, you know, if Twitter was blowing up, and they should have, because the Gold Eyes team was a special one this year, and they deserve all the praise that they're getting.
What about the PR angle here?
Yeah.
I mean, the fans have a great time. They enjoy the games. They enjoy the experience. They enjoy the experience of being outside. And I think you have a big contrast between the two teams that you mentioned.
That's right. I mean, right now, the public relation. I mean, the Gold Eyes, you never hear anybody say anything negative about the Gold Eyes. And, I mean, that's to their credit. They put on a, you know, even if the team was lousy, and even if the team lost, you know, more than they won, fortunately, they've been a success, you know, a tremendous success on field.
By the
people
way,
go and they have a great time regardless. And they don't. You don't hear any of this, the negativity that hangs over the football team.
Exactly.
Right now.
Credit, by the way, to their general manager.
Yeah, Andrew Collier, of course, does a fabulous job as the general manager there. Everybody goes to the Gold Eyes games and you have a good time. Nobody ever, and that's really what you see more than anything. The product on the field is almost secondary because you know you're going to have a good time when you're out at the game.
Especially the amount of kids that you see there, and the all ages, really. But give credit. I mean, put together a team that wins a championship, and the general manager has that responsibility. They've done a great job.
Exactly right. We've obviously lost Paul. He's traveling back to Winnipeg from Wichita. Cell service can be a little spotty down in the U.S., but we wanted to let you know that the Gold Eyes season wrap-up show, Monday, 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Paul Edmonds in studio, 2 hours, wrapping the Gold Eyes season, everything about the Gold Eyes, the American Association champion, Winnipeg Gold Eyes. So a big congratulations to everybody in the Gold Eyes organization, from head coach Rick Forney, all the players who had tremendous performances. Amos Ramon, Brian Boyning, all those guys. Paul Edmonds, of course. You know, Andrew Collier, the entire Winnipeg Gold Eyes organization. Join us here Monday afternoon from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock for the Gold Eyes wrap-up show here on TSN 1290. Let's go to break. When we come back, we shift our focus back to hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Good concert, Richie?
Oh, best ever.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's good.
100% the best ever.
Well, we welcome you back to the show here. You missed last week. You were out in Wrigley, seeing Bruce live in Wrigley.
Unbelievable.
Okay, glad you enjoyed it.
Didn't play Glory Days, but I didn't need to hear Glory Days.
You're okay. You've heard it before?
Yeah, Eddie Vedder came out.
Really?
For a couple songs. Tom Morello.
When you told me that was incredible.
Unreal.
Two favorite bands of that era, of the 90s, Pearl Jam and Rage. That's unbelievable.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the program. This is TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website, www.illegalcurve.com. Your Winnipeg Jets morning papers are up and available to read. Of course, big happy birthday shout out to the author of the Winnipeg Jets morning papers, Dave Minuk.
So, absolutely. You know, happy birthday, Dave. I know he's listening. We had breakfast with him this morning.
Yeah.
Does a great job.
Do you guys cover breakfast?
No, Ezzy covered his breakfast.
Oh, very nice.
Well, when the bill came, Remus and Drew weren't reaching for that check.
In the washroom.
Yeah, exactly. We got out of there real quick. You know, we mentioned it right off the top. You know, we're down to less than 12 hours to go. It is a foregone conclusion that there's probably going to be a lockout. It would be a stunning turn of events, let's say, if something happened between now and 10:59 p.m. You know, both sides met and they postured publicly and they came out and they, you know, pretended that their offers were going to change slightly and everything else. But, you know, it doesn't seem, and I don't know, you can say if this is fair or not. To my perspective is they didn't really try that hard to prevent this from happening.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, Drew, that's, I think that falls on Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman. I think that's what it's come down to, really. I think this is Donald Fehr versus Gary Bettman.
Is this an ego fight now?
It's going to be a part of it, for sure. I don't think there's any question about it. I think from what we've heard, Fehr has united the players far more than they've ever been united, at least in the recent past. And if you're a fan, that's probably not the best thing you want to hear. Now, the owners are generally always united. I mean, let's be honest here. They're willing to sit out for a fair amount of time. And I think what happens is now the owners have always been steadfast behind Gary Bettman, or at least that appears to be the case because they can't speak and they have a gag order. Now, if you look at the players, they seem to be all behind Donald Fehr. And if Donald Fehr is not willing to budge, because we know Donald Fehr's background is from Marvin Miller and Major League Baseball.
Right.
I mean, if Marvin Miller had his way, they would obliterate the cap system right now in hockey. That'd take 4 years. But it's that whole concept of there shouldn't be a limit on spending, blah, blah, blah. I think everybody in here knows the logical solution to the problem. We've been saying it for months. You know, you get to that 50, 51, 52, around there. What's NBA's 50 and NFL's 50 around there?
Yeah, but close enough to 50-50 that you're not wrong.
50-50,
yeah.
Get some revenue sharing in there. Really should leave the system the way it is aside from that. If you want to maybe make sure the contracts can't be spread out 15 years, it's really not that hard. So what's all the posturing about?
Well, I mean, you're saying it's just the ego at that point? I mean, you're right, because you and I and Ezzy, and we've said it for a number of months now, we know that what the end product of this is going to look like. Yep. It's not going to be a revolutionary system where they scrap the salary cap and they go to some sort of luxury tax format. That, I mean, the owners would never accept that. They would lock out for years rather than do that. So if we all know how it's going to end...
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, in their heart of hearts, both Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman probably know how it's going to end as well. Why do they have to drag everyone through this?
It's a good question, and it's a good question because in 2004, we didn't know what the end game was. We really didn't. Bob Goodenow and Gary Bettman were in a personal war that dated back to the mid-90s.
But you're right, in 2004, in the sense that... You know, it wasn't a clear-cut guarantee. You know, had the Players Association stayed unified, maybe there wouldn't be a salary cap. You didn't know for sure that there was going to be a salary cap in 04. You knew that was what the owners wanted, but you didn't know that they were going to get it for sure.
Well, it's interesting this time around because I as a hockey fan, and you guys are obviously hockey fans, and we all are, you know, when I look back at 2004, it really is extremely frustrating what's going on because... When you look at what's happening in the NHL, and we've talked about it on the show all summer leading up to the lockout, everyone knew there was a lockout coming. When you look at what's happening in the NHL with the big American markets, the LAs, the Bostons, the Chicagos, they have turned things around. And that was more important over the last 8 years as opposed to in between 1994 and 2004, which was growing the U.S. Sun Belt and getting the Phoenixes and all those teams, the Columbuses in the NHL. This time around... It is simple, and Richie is right. I mean, it is about splitting up the hockey-related revenue, just like the NFL did recently, just like the NBA did recently. And sure, there's egos at play. Donald Fehr is an extremely intelligent guy. I mean, he's the guy when it comes to the union and labor negotiations. He's the guy.
He's a scrapper, too.
He's a scrapper. Gary Bettman is not going to outsmart him. Gary Bettman's got the power. Gary Bettman's not losing the power, and it's really interesting...
Along those lines, we said it last week that Gary Bettman is used to being the smartest guy in the room at all times.
Yep.
When he's up against Donald Fehr in that same room, I don't think he's not clear cut the smartest guy in that room at all. Fehr is a skilled negotiator who also knows how to, you know, engage in, you know, some of the barroom tactics to get the best deal possible for his players.
There's a good article in the Globe this week talking about how Fehr was talking about when he was with baseball. Mm-hmm. It was far easier to unite the players than it is in hockey, because so many players are from so many different countries and they have so many different views on how things should be done.
Right.
And some rivalries and things like that. Baseball's a little bit more united. You know, you really don't have that head-to-head competition in baseball. The hitting, the they play their own. It's an individual game, really.
Yes, wrapped inside of a team game.
Exactly.
Right.
So in hockey, it's a little bit different. Rivalries built. Players don't like each other. There's been past negotiations that have gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to put everybody together has been more difficult, but it seems like he's done a pretty good job of it.
One area in which I can see the players running into some trouble. I mean, the owners, it's clear, only Gary Bettman can speak for the owners.
Yeah. And they love it that way.
And Gary Bettman has threatened them with significant fines, and you know that's and
we you said that's the best better way to negotiate.
It makes sense. You have one voice speaking for your side. The players, first of all, every second player is saying something publicly. Right now, they're all on the same page. But if you read Ole Jokinen's comments, mm-hmm. and we'll talk.
Those comments. And we'll talk, I have respect for Ole Jokinen for saying that.
He didn't try and pull the wool over anyone's eyes. He said it's strictly about money.
Yeah.
You know, he was honest
about it. More
guys
should be saying that, because it's not about ideologies. It's not about anything else but money.
You know, the problem is, you know, the owners, for the most part, are all relatively intelligent people. They're successful.
I wouldn't agree with that. But
they're successful.
I would.
Successful businessmen. They've got to this point because they're not stupid.
100%.
A lot of the players, and
they
I'm
do
not
stupid
saying
things though.
I'm not saying that.
Sure.
Yeah, they do stupid things. The owners, some of them, but they're not stupid individuals. Some of the players might start spouting off when they don't fully know what they're talking about. If I'm, you know, and that's where the NHLPA could potentially run into some trouble, is if people are speaking out of turn.
Well, you want to keep it exactly, Drew. You want to keep it as fair and Bettman speaking, because nobody can relate to the players. Nobody.
That's right.
As Roy McGregor wrote in the Globe this morning, fabulous article. They make more in one paycheck than in one season some people do in their entire lives.
That's right.
So they can't relate to you. So don't talk. Don't try and act like, you know, you're the Chicago Teachers Union.
Well, Brent Sopel got into a lot of trouble, and we'll talk about that in rapid fire, you know, later on in the program.
I didn't see that he did, but I was in Chicago during that. It was all the headlines.
Right.
But it's just, you can't compare it.
Was he at the Bruce Springsteen concert?
Actually, all the Blackhawks were there.
Okay.
And Chris Chelios.
Oh. But, I mean, that's where they're going to eventually run into some problems. If there's not that gag order from the start.
Absolutely.
Some of the players, especially the guys who are towards the tail end of their career, and they're not the superstars. They're not the $8 million guys. They're the $1.2 million guys who will never get that money back ever.
What about the $8 million guys who's on the last year of his deal who knows he's never going to get that contract again?
Well, if you're Scott Gomez.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's in the last year or the second last year. In any event, you're never getting a contract close to that much.
Right. So you're telling me that you're not going to get a contract even for $6 million, $5 million, whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
So you're telling me that Scott Gomez is in favor of this lockout?
No chance.
And the longer it goes,
he'll never make that back.
That somebody, you know, that Scott Gomez, and I'm using him as an example, not specific, that Scott Gomez won't want to start speaking publicly and maybe, you know, try and push them back to an agreement.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, Ron Hainsey, Winnipeg Jet, clearly is united with the players. He's never going to make the money he's making again.
No. Nope.
He's not worth what he's making. So, you know, give him credit for sacrificing for the future, but how long will that last? Maybe it will last the duration of the negotiations, but maybe it won't.
See, that's where it's at. That's where it's at. You know, there's still the possibility that the players can win. There's still the possibility that the owners win, because we all know we've all lost already. Everybody has already lost. The fans have lost. We're going to lose games that we easily could have not have lost. But this is for the future, and the players can win this. But when you have, you know, the public opinion aspect of this, and you have guys that aren't helping anything by saying that, you know, this is really about, you know, this is about the future and all this. You know what? Let's be honest here. This is about the players saying that, no, we want this amount of money, and the owners saying, no, we want to give you less money because we feel like you are overpaid. So let's not pretend this is anything else. And when you have the players just adding to it, you know what? At this point, guys, just let these negotiations happen.
That's right.
All again, we've said this, you know, for the last few months. All fans want, especially fans here in Winnipeg that have the season tickets, they just want to go watch their team play. They don't care how much money they make. They know they get a lot of money. But they just want to go support. I mean, you're talking about guys that are, you know, pooling all their money together to buy season tickets.
That's right.
It's very expensive to go to hockey games unless you're in Florida or Phoenix. But, I mean, these guys make a lot of money. And sure, players, you're entitled to say that you're still worth that amount of money. But don't try to try to mask this under some other ideology or something like that. And as far as the owners go, they're not saying anything, but you know, they're not helping anything by lowering, they're not going to be lowering ticket prices, or they're not going to get any sympathy from me when they're giving out 7-year deals, $200 billion deals, and then crying that they want to limit player contracts and they want to limit salaries. So
that's right, exactly.
The problem is, it's owners versus players. Each guy comes out, it's like an election. It's almost like an election, and you're pitting the owners versus the players. Well, the problem is, you're all wrong.
That's right.
You're not going to win any sympathy. They're all wrong.
Of course. And I mean, they'd be foolish to ask for sympathy, because they're, you know, when you're talking about dollars and cents that people can't, you know, most average people can't wrap their brains around it, because like that article said, you know, the third line scrub, it makes more money in 1 year than the average person does in the entire lifetime of their working career. So, anybody that's silly enough, foolish enough to try and work a sympathetic angle here badly misjudges the market and the feeling that both sides, that the public has for both sides.
As you made a great point, it's both sides, because they're going to cut down the revenue that they're paying, the amount of money they're paying the players.
Right.
Or the cut of the revenue. And if revenues rise, it probably won't change it too much, and the ticket prices are going to increase.
Yeah, that's right. Ticket prices aren't going to go
so
down.
The owners aren't representing the fans anymore.
Well, and you know, in the 2004 lockout, Gary Bettman sort of got away. People gave him a pass on the, you know, what obviously was a red herring, that this will result in lower ticket prices for fans. It never did. It never had a chance to. When you're a gate-driven league, you know, it's a basic economic supply and demand. When you're a gate-driven league, you can charge as much as you want so long as people are willing to buy them.
That's right.
And I don't fault the owners for that. That's just logical business practices. You know, they're not in it for charity. They want to they want to make as much money from ticket revenue as they possibly can.
The fans have all the control. That's the funniest part. The fans have all the control.
If they stop playing. But we both know. And, I mean, that was what Roy McGregor's article in the Globe was about. And we'll tweet it out. Remus, we'll tweet it out on our Twitter page, at Legal Curve, right now. It's a fabulous article. He says, we put too much emphasis on the importance of hockey. The country of Canada and the citizens of Canada put too much emphasis on the importance of hockey. So this is an opportunity.
He's right. And these guys make, on average, $2.5 million. And you know what? They've reached the pinnacle of their sport. They deserve to get paid, but step back for a second and think about what's going on in the world. All those people that have lost their jobs. There's a recession. Times are tough now. This isn't, you know, around the world. There's a lot of things that are going wrong in the world with the economy and everything. And sit back and realize that you're getting paid a lot of money. So to ask for more money, and I'm not putting it all on the players, because the owners are responsible for driving these salaries up as well. But that's not what it's about. It's just about money, and it's not about anything else. It's not about the fans. It's not about compassion or anything like that. And the unfortunate thing is, the fans see that. The fans see right through this lockout. Everyone sees right through it. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're seeing a lot of anger, you know, whether it's a Twitter or the street, just because people just want to watch the sport that they love, and that's it. They don't really care, at the end of the day, if a guy makes 2.7, 2.3, 2.1. That's for guys like us to analyze that type of stuff. But really, at the end of the day, that's not what it's about. It's about the sport and the love of the sport.
If you're looking to be sympathetic towards anybody in here, be sympathetic towards the average front office employee or average concession stand employee who relies on there being 41 home hockey games a year in order to make whatever amount of money they make doing their job, selling the popcorn, pouring the beer, whatever else, because they will never recoup that money as well. So if you want to be, if you're looking for sympathy, look for them. Apparently, the NHL is already starting to lay off people in their head office come Monday. You know, be sympathetic to them. Be sympathetic to the front office employees who just go about their day-to-day jobs. As you know, this is just a job for them, making whatever amount of money they are making per year. You know, that will never have an opportunity, that are collateral damage that nobody is talking about. Those are the people you should have sympathy for. Before we go to break, a quick tweet from Bob McKenzie. He says that there is no chance P.K. Subban signs in Montreal today, and he's hearing the same about Evander Kane in Winnipeg. When we come back, Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us, and one of the things we'll talk about is Evander Kane. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to be joined by Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press coming up in about 90 seconds or so. Before then, we're going to play you some audio. This is an interview that Ed conducted with Evander Kane earlier this week. Evander was in town, of course, signing NHL 13 at a local video game store. This is the interview that Ed conducted with Evander Kane from earlier this week.
Well, I guess everybody wants to know, are you here to sign something else besides the jerseys? And
I'm gonna keep everything in-house. I'm here for the NHL 13 launch, so that's what I'm doing.
So this is between the agent and the Jets. Is that sort of the party line then?
Yeah, sure is.
There's been so much speculation all summer about, you know, does Evander Kane want to be here? Is he asked to be traded? You know, can you comment at all about that?
No, you know, I think all that speculation, you know, kind of followed throughout the entire season, and, you know, that's exactly what it was. So, you know, I'm not going to talk about anything in the future or any contract type of stuff. So that's just between my agent and Winnipeg. So,
seeing your picture in that jersey has to be comforting to some people, though.
What do you mean?
In the Jets jersey, it doesn't mean that, you know, means you're going to be here.
Well, it means, you know, I'm on the cover and part of the launch. So, I mean, I don't know what you want me to say.
Well, just there's so many people that, you know, you're a future cornerstone with this franchise, and people are wondering, is Evander Kane going to be here long term?
Well, you know, I think, like I said, that's up to my my agent and the Jets to sort something out, and, you know, we'll see what happens from here on out.
Can you give anybody a sense of if you're closer? I know I got to keep trying.
Yeah, you know, you're going to keep trying and keep getting denied. So it's between my agent and Winnipeg.
We're joined now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press. Ed, good afternoon. How are you?
Not too bad, fellas. How you doing?
We're doing well, thank you. Hopefully you'll see some better football today at the Bisons game.
That won't be hard.
Ed, I mean, we just played the interview you conducted with Evander Kane earlier this week. Were you surprised by his answers, or, you know, more specifically, the tone to the answers, you know, that he gave to your questions?
Yeah, you know, I guess I wasn't surprised by the answers. You know, I was surprised by the tone. I was surprised by, I guess, the lack of willingness to just even throw people a bone. And maybe, you know, people would think it's phony, that it's just some sort of PR dance. But if he had just said, you know, I really enjoyed my year in Winnipeg, and, you know, I'm hoping that something can get worked out, or anything like that, that would have given people a sense that he wanted to be here, it would have really changed, I think, the opinion a lot of people have of Evander Kane. But he didn't. He played it close to the vest, which, of course, is his right in negotiations. But it was, to me, it was just sort of cold. It was almost a cold response to everything. And I attempted in that interview to throw a couple softballs at him, even to just jump in and say something positive about the Jets or his experience, and he didn't. And I guess for Jets fans, that's probably pretty disappointing.
Yeah, do you think there's a possibility? I mean, reading between the lines a bit, do you think there's a possibility that Evander's demanded a trade with a mutual understanding of both parties being silent until something's complete?
Well, I think anything's possible at this point. You know, if the reports are true that he had the offer on the table of a 6-year deal worth, you know, probably in excess of $5 million a year, and he turned it down, that's part of the negotiations. But I'm just going to kind of jump in on all the other speculation we've heard. There's a lot of people that think, and I guess I'm one of them, that I'm not sure how much Evander Kane wants to be in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And so maybe he doesn't want to have anything to do with a long-term contract. Maybe he wants to sign something shorter. Maybe he does want to stay here and sign something with a little bit more lucrative than what the Jets have put on the table. But it's hard to get a feel for anything because, you know, both sides, the Jets and Kane and his agent, have been really quiet about this. And we've got so many people in that cover NHL now that haven't even got a sniff of where things are going with this. That tells you how tight-lipped everybody's been.
Ed, we've seen so many teams and players and agents signing deals right before today's deadline. Milan Lucic just signed today with the Boston Bruins. Do you think it's possible that Evander Kane has missed his opportunity to cash in with the Jets?
Well, I'm not sure that you know, if once this thing gets settled, that there won't still be a long-term deal on the table. But you're right, you know, that could be shaped by the way the new CBA is set up. And so it's possible he's given up a lot of money. But, you know, again, my sense is that he wants to sign something shorter. And if that's the case, then he could probably still get the amount of money he wants, whether it's this CBA or the new one that will be hammered out whenever.
You know, how do you think, you know, we're obviously September 15th today, we're going to be in a lockout in a number of hours. You know, at the end of this all, you know, he's eventually going to sign or be traded. How do you think this resolves itself?
I'm sorry, there's so many people here now. What was that again?
How do you think this situation will end up resolving itself?
Well, I think that the Jets still hold the cards here, and so I think that he'll still be a Jet. I don't think he'll sign a long-term deal. That's my gut feeling, that he would settle for a two-year deal for maybe $6 million, maybe less. I'm not sure. But, you know, I guess, you know, we're not in on the negotiations and we're not getting any sense of them. But, you know, if the Jets feel that they have a player that doesn't want to be here long-term and they're trying to build something, you know, a foundation around young stars like Evander Kane, then you know, it's only going to lend itself to more of these rumors about them shopping him. And I think that's a very real possibility, is that he could sign a short-term deal. And then after that, you know, depending on his desire or not of a desire to remain in Winnipeg long-term, that they start shopping him.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ed Tate, a hockey writer for the Winnipeg Free Press.
Ed, you mentioned two-year contracts. A player who signed a two-year contract last offseason, Zach Bogosian. Were you at all surprised that he had surgery so late in the summer?
Yeah, I saw Zach this week at the Iceplex, but we weren't allowed to talk to him to get a sense of what had happened. I don't know what happened there, guys. I get this, you know, I guess what we're hearing from the Jets is that he was working out and this was a chronic injury that it just became too much, and maybe he thought that he could fight his way through it. But I guess as the summer rolled on and he kept pushing, you know, his off-season training, it became worse and worse. But it's a great question to ask, is that if it was bothering you at the end of the season, why didn't you have the surgery in May? And then when they were up and ready to start playing again, he would probably be available. As it stands now, we're probably looking at January, maybe at the earliest, before he's ready to go again.
Ed, the last time that we had you on was back on Canada Day at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe, our Free Agent Frenzy show. And now that it's been, you know, about 2.5 months, and the Jets have basically made all of their moves and signings except for Evander Kane, how would you rate the Jets' offseason this summer?
I'd give it a C+, a B. I thought they've done an okay job. They really addressed a couple of their needs. You know, they needed to get bigger, and people have to understand that bigger doesn't mean that you're smashing someone into the end boards or a knuckle dragger that's going to drop the gloves and fight somebody. Guys like Jokinen and Ponikarovsky are just hard to take off the puck sometimes, and they're able to withstand the pounding on those back-to-back games. So I like what they did there. Al Montoya is an interesting one to replace Chris Mason. And, you know, guys, there's still some interesting names out there. And I think once the CBA thing is settled, there might be a piece here or there that they sign, you know, an unrestricted free agent or two that might help augment what they have. That's just a guess on my part. So, you know, I think it wasn't bad. You know, it wasn't a big splash. You know, I know that they sniffed around on some guys, but we never really expected them to be in the Zach Parise, Ryan Suter discussion. So, you know, I think they did all right.
Ed, we'll let you go on this final question. We are now into, you know, unfortunately, it's all CBA from here on out, pretty much. You know, how involved is Mark Chipman, Jets owner Mark Chipman, in the overall CBA negotiations?
Well, I think all the owners have a say in it, and I know he was in New York, but, you know, unlike the PA, the Gary Bettman wants one voice out of all this, and it's going to be his voice. So I think that Mark is just, you know, he's one of 30 guys that's going to be in there letting his opinion be known. From what I understand, someone from the Jets will speak to the media Sunday or Monday about the lockout and, you know, just answer questions about, might be Jim Ludlow from the True North, answer questions that fans might have about, you know, tickets and refunds and all that kind of stuff. But, we're not going to hear much about anything out of Mark Chipman's mouth until this whole thing is settled.
Well, we shall play the wait-and-see game. Ed Tate, Winnipeg Free Press, thanks very much for joining us. Hopefully the Bisons will put on a good show for you this afternoon.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Have a good day.
You too, Ed. Thanks very much.
Call Ed.
Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press. Let's go to break. When we come back, I want to discuss Evander Kane more so, you know, get your guys' opinions on it. You hear that audio, you hear the responses there. Doesn't leave you with a warm feeling. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done. Ezzy, who was at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza last night?
Our friend Dan Simon tweeted this out. Zach Bogosian picking up at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza. Shout out to Carbone and Zach Bogosian. If Zach Bogosian's listening, which I know he is, let us know what kind of pizza you got and how you enjoyed it. I'm sure he loved it.
Yeah. Pizzas are big, though. How could he carry it with his wrist?
Well,
that's true.
You can do the under the arm. Trust me, I'm a guy who's picked up his share of pizzas over the years.
That we know.
Yeah, so you can do the whole under the arm, under the crook of the arm thing. I bet you that's how he probably was able to.
Slide down on the box then?
No, the box is sealed tight. It's not like, I mean, it's a perfectly spaced out box for the pizza.
Richie, remember we were trying to figure out what Drew was doing last night? He was actually carrying Zach Bogosian's pizza for him.
Ah, that's right. And eating it for him too.
Oh, it's one of those things I'm quite good at. You know, that's where I'm a Viking. Is when it comes to eating pizza. That's my strong suit.
Remus, do you have the Vikings first down horn for that comment?
You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, we just spoke to Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press. You heard the audio of his interview with Evander Kane from earlier this week. As a Winnipeg Jets fan, you know, who really thinks that Evander Kane should be a long-term piece of this puzzle, is a skilled player, is a future star in the NHL.
He's a star now.
Well, yeah. Agreed. Who's only probably going to improve. Give me one reason to have confidence he wants to be here.
There's no reason. There's nothing I can give you.
Ed came on and he was talking about the interview and, you know, we played the interview. The reason why we played the interview is so that everyone could hear it and know what we were talking about. And you know, I have to agree with Ed. I mean, you know, we talk to a lot of fans. I mean, we have a lot of people following us on Twitter, and we all talk to people, you know, in on the street, so to speak, all the time. And people always ask me about Evander Kane, what's going on. I wrote an article about it. Richie wrote an article establishing his market value back in January. I mean, this is a big topic. Evander Kane, he's wearing Bobby Hall's number. He got permission to wear it. He's the star. He's the most talented guy on the team. People want to know what's up. And people know that, you know, it's not that easy to sign a guy. You know, he might want 2 years. He might want a six-year deal. But the fact is, in the public opinion, or in the, you know, the public view, so, more so, he's not giving any indication that he wants to be here. I have to agree with Ed when he says that he was giving him softballs, and Evander Kane could have easily said, you know what, I'm going to let my agent do it, agent settle the deal, but I'm also, you know, hopefully I want to be back here. He never says that, and it's fine. He doesn't need to say that, but, you know, he could really help his case because he has to know that a lot of people aren't sure if he really wants to be in Winnipeg. And until he says something like that, or until he signs the contract, how are we going to know that? Because he never says anything. He doesn't let us know that he wants to be here. A lot of the guys, their first year here, they let us know that they loved being here. Bogosian for one of them. A lot of these guys, and Evander Kane hasn't said anything. And when you hear all this stuff, even though it might not be true, he doesn't come out and deny it.
No.
His agent denies it, and that's fine. His agent emailed you back, Drew, and said that he was denying all these rumors. Evander Kane hasn't tweeted anything. He hasn't said anything. And again, Evander Kane is a grown-up. He can do what he wants. This is his career. But he could throw us a bone.
It's important to know his agent's a Winnipegger.
Right.
So you'd think that an agent from Winnipeg would be supportive of the city.
Well, the agent's job is getting Evander his best, doing what Evander wants.
But that's not what we're talking about. Yes, exactly. So he's representing what Evander wants, but it's not something that you think the agent would be pushing him away or something like that. It simply looks like the guy wants out. And so if the guy wants out,
perception is reality, Richie, right?
Exactly. I think that's exactly right in this situation. And, I mean, look at the comments. Look at his actions throughout the year. And, again, the talent is there. We know what he's going to be. He's going to probably be a 35 to 40 goal scorer for a long time. You have to get close to equal value for him. So you
can you?
Yeah.
You trade him. If it becomes, you know, do you think, and I'll put you on the spot, that he's asked for a trade?
Oh, personally, yeah, I do.
So you think he's asked for a trade. How can you get equal value for him in a trade market?
I mean, it's possible. There's always, think about it this way, Drew.
With other teams knowing that he's really, you know, he's already demanded, yeah. He's asked for it, he just hasn't done it publicly.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, he wants to get paid.
And the Jets are in a better position than trading, for example, Don Waddell a couple of years ago with Ilya Kovalchuk. Jets have all the power.
Well, of course.
Vander Kane isn't going anywhere. He's a restricted free agent with no arbitration rights. That is past. But, I mean, the Jets can wait as long as they want to trade Vander Kane.
Because he wants to get paid, so I think he'd probably still sign. And like Zed said, he'd sign because he wants money. And then he would just demand and maybe pout, but he's better than not having him there at all. He's a problem. I think there's no doubt about that. I mean, it doesn't seem like he's that well-liked in the locker room, from what we can tell. This is our opinion. And I think, can you get
equal... That's not just our opinion, though. We've heard...
No one's ever said anything negative about him. It is our opinion that we don't think he might be the most popular teammate.
Yeah, and generally, guys who don't pass a lot aren't the most popular teammates. That just goes with it. If you play hockey at any level, the guys who don't pass a lot.
Right. When I was playing on Richie's line this year, he didn't pass to me, but he's my best friend, so I
also,
still have
were,
to like
you were,
him.
You were trailing the play because you couldn't catch up to
him.
Oh,
yeah. I was holding on to the boards for dear life.
Yeah. With that digression there. Back to what we were saying about equal value. You know, there's always players that are available, Drew, and people will... I think it's different when a guy's at the tail end of his career and you're really not sure what he's going to give you. Like, if Jerome McGinley goes in the market, what will he give you?
Sure.
People aren't necessarily sure. With Evander Kane, you know he's on the upswing. So guys like that fetch a big return. And it might be that you get a guy in another situation who's not that happy or they can't come to agreement with, who's on the upswing. Or maybe it's a guy who's disgruntled like a Bobby Ryan, or at least he was. He says he's fine with being in Anaheim now. Yeah. Who knows?
Because he's not golfing, so.
Right, but a situation like that. I mean, who knows, right? You don't know what the situation is. So I don't think trading him would be as big of an issue. I don't.
Right.
I think that a team right now would probably want to know what happens with the CBA before they make a deal, too, right? So that has that's the complex part of this.
If the next CBA, you know, anytime there's a CBA renegotiation, it usually affects the younger players more than it does the grizzled veterans.
Right, but what I mean, quickly, and that's a good point, but what I'm saying is if you're a team acquiring him and you're close to the cap, you know you're going to have to pay him a lot of money.
Right.
You want to see what the cap's going to be before you maybe make a trade. Maybe there are trades on the table waiting.
Well, and agreed. I mean, you want to see the landscape of what you're negotiating and what you're playing in before you want to make that deal.
Why was he here on Monday?
Well, he was here because NHL 13 was, had his picture on it.
Right.
And
for the Winnipeg market.
Yeah. And the question is, were they giving him a check?
Well, generally speaking, anytime I sign autographs, it's because I've been given a check.
So.
But, I mean, you know.
You can speculate on that one, too.
And you hear his comments to Ed.
Your check is significantly less than Evander Kane's check.
Significantly. You hear the comments he made to Ed. And Ed said it on there, you know. He's had a number of opportunities in the course of the last month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months to throw the city of Winnipeg a bone.
Yeah.
And most people in the city of Winnipeg would, you know, people like to be pandered to. You know, they like to hear nice things. They like to get a warm, fuzzy feeling.
Hockey fans should want that. When they're the ones that are dishing out $8,000 for season tickets, they should want to be pandered to. I'm with
them. Throw me a freaking bone here.
But, you know, people want to hear nice things about the city that the guy's playing in. And the other guys have been usually pretty good at making... And even if they're just platitudes, people are quite happy to accept platitudes. He has not said one thing. He did an interview with our sister station in Vancouver at the Vancouver Giants golf tournament, mm-hmm. Which is the CHL team that he played for in the WHL, his junior team. And they gave him an opportunity to sort of, you know, they threw him the softballs. You know, it was a charity tournament. It wasn't a hard-hitting interview. But he doesn't even take the softball questions, say anything nice. You know, you think that's part of a sort of a master plan that he has in place? You know, you think that's, you know, part of his way of getting out of town, if that's what he desires?
Might be.
Again, we don't know if he's asked for a trade or if the trade is an option at this point. It might be down the road. But the facts are that Jeff Skinner, Jordan Eberle, Taylor Hall, Tyler Seguin, the list goes on and on, Milan Lucic, everybody's signing contracts. Sure, P.K. Subban is still out there, you know, but P.K. Subban, I don't think, affects Evander Kane at all in the sense that, you know, there's only a couple of players left that haven't signed. But, I mean, he hasn't signed yet, and all these other guys have signed, and the CBA is expiring, and it looks like he's not going to sign. And if he wants out of town, that's he's young and he's an up-and-coming star, and if he wants to play for another team, then that's fine. But he isn't going to get any sympathy from anybody for the way he's acted, because they've given him, you know what, 6 years, $29 million? That's a pretty good offer to Evander Kane. You're not going to get much better than that.
The truth is, I think that in terms of setting the bar, the contract bar, it's been set by a lot of the other players so far. So, you know, what he's worth, quote unquote, has been established by some of the other contracts that have been signed. You know, so I don't think it's a dollars and cents thing. It shouldn't be a dollars and cents thing at this point. They're like, look, you're not as good as the X player, but you're better than Y player.
I mean, that works to an extent, but then they pay guys who are better than other guys more money.
But I mean, if he signs a 6-year deal, we have a pretty good idea of what it should be for.
Well, hey, it's possible that he wants 6 years and something like $36 million. I don't think that's completely insane to throw that out there. But, I mean,
and
if that's what he wants, he's probably not going
to
get it.
And if he does, I think there's a deal to be made there. I think the Jets would find a way to make that deal.
Yeah.
If he's willing to make a 6-year commitment and say he's going to be in Winnipeg until he's an unrestricted free agent.
Oh, I mean, it's 4 years till UFA.
Right, so, I mean, and then some. You know, the Jets would be glad to make that deal happen.
Yeah.
I think the problem is he probably wants either to be out now or to sign just that, you know,
a bridge deal, a 2-year deal. Yeah,
well, not even a 2-year deal, because that would be, well, I mean, a 2-year deal would be fine. It would leave him with arbitration rights,
right?
But or
the
that
Jets
four
hanging, though.
Yeah, or that 4-year deal where he's on the where he's out the door as soon as that fourth year hits.
Yeah. And I mean, again, a lot of these guys, I think, aren't. I think one of the things with the CBA, back to the CBA quickly, is that this is what's happened from the last negotiation. All the middle guys are getting all their money. The top guys are basically staying the same, and the low-end guys are going. You know, like all these guys, you know, Lucic gets up to $6 million. I love Lucic's game, but how close are these guys?
He's one of the highest-paid guys in the league
now. Sidney Crosby. I mean, the top guys haven't changed at all. The big players years ago were making $9, $8, $10 million. They're making a little bit less.
Yep.
The middle guys are all making more money now.
Well, it's Bill Simmons during the NBA lockout wrote a good article about how, you know, if anything, the superstars
are getting underpaid.
You know who the superstars
in the
are.
System.
Those are the guys who are underpaid.
Right.
And it's the middle and bottom end guys who are more or less replaceable. Nobody's paying money to see, you know, your third line center. More or less, those guys are the ones who are overpaid, and that the gap should be higher between the superstars and everybody else, as opposed to now where sort of almost everybody from third line guy to superstar are more or less muddled relatively close to one another.
Again, and you can't blame the NHLPA or the players for that, because again, that means that the owners, they're probably, realistically, they're looking at comparables and they're looking at a guy's year, and they're on average giving $500,000 to $1 million more to those guys that are in the 45 to 55 point range.
Yeah, these guys had Tavares' contract as a benchmark, and a bunch of them exceeded it.
Yep.
That's right.
And Tavares, the real reality is you could make a strong argument Tavares is better than Skinner, Sagan, Hall, all those guys.
Correct.
And they're getting more money. Absolutely. Tavares is arguably a top five player, so you're right. The owners are just as responsible, if not more, I would argue more responsible, for driving up salaries and giving guys more than they're worth.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Jack Edwards, play-by-play man for the Boston Bruins, is going to join us. They've been more than active the last week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. Jack Edwards, welcome back to the program. How are you this afternoon?
Anxious. How are you?
We're doing well. I understand the anxiousness, but I'd say it's probably best just to let it slide by later on tonight and focus on something more positive.
Yeah, I guess you can charge $200 an hour as a therapist then. Yeah, that's good. I can't believe hockey's going to drive itself off the cliff again, but it looks like that's the way it's going to be. At least they're going to go eyeball to eyeball and see if somebody blinks.
Yeah, and at some point somebody will, but I think it might be a little bit down the road, which is the unfortunate part for all us fans. Ahead of this deadline today, the Bruins have been one of the most active teams. Earlier today, they signed yet another player, Milan Lucic, to a 3-year, $18 million contract. Starting next season, he's going to be the highest paid forward on the Boston Bruins. Are you surprised about that?
No, actually, you got to remember that Peter Chiarelli is many things, but he is, among those many things, a Harvard man. And, the Harvard Business School, those are the guys that we love to hate. You know, they're the guys that always seem to do well in business, even in the worst of times. And One of the real markers of Shirelli's regime in Boston has been capital T, capital P, the plan. And he's aware of what's going on this year in order to compete for this season. He's also aware of what's going on next year and 5 years down the line. And if you look at his signings, they're really a model of how NHL teams probably ought to behave. There haven't been any extraordinary contracts. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could say that the Thomas signing was an emotional contract after the Vezina Trophy, but you know, even that has looked pretty good until Tim Thomas lost his mind. But apart from that, there's been a real strategic approach that isn't going to blow up the team, that allows the Bruins to attack now and also plan for the future. And the Lucic signing at $6 million per year starting next season, you know, I'm talking about the 13-14 mm-hmm. season, fits directly in. I mean, the only guy they've got who's expiring, who's really an important player, is Tuukka Rask, and that's because Rask chose to go 1 year after Thomas sort of went nutty.
Oh, another player that the Bruins signed is Tyler Seguin, another contract extension. Did the Taylor Hall extension in Edmonton play a part in Tyler signing that contract extension?
I think it played perhaps a part, but it certainly is a secondary part. A bigger issue is the expiry of the collective bargaining agreement, which happens this evening. So I think that's why we see this flurry of signings of Taylor Hall, of Tyler Seguin, of Jeff Skinner, and you know, several other young promising players who were about to come up. So as soon as they're eligible, you know, in the final.
I think we may have lost Jack Edwards there. We're having a not a great track record so far this morning. Jack, are you still there?
Yeah.
Sorry, Jack, you cut out on us for a while, for a bit of that answer.
I'm sorry. Do you have me back?
Yeah, we have you back. Jack, it's okay. You know, we got the gist of what you were saying there. And on Seguin, I guess the next question really is, he's been playing the wing in his first couple of years in Boston and with Bergeron and Krejci ahead of him. Do you see Seguin moving to center next season, if there is a season, of course, or do you see him staying on the wing until something else kind of plays out?
Well, if Tyler Seguin is to reach his potential as an NHL player, you have to figure he's going to end up in the middle of the ice because he is a guy who has vision. He's a dynamic player, and the more he gets the puck on his stick, the better. But right now, I think the Bruins are pretty satisfied with his learning curve and his development rate. And giving him a good eyeful of Patrice Bergeron on a very regular basis is only good for Seguin's career. You know, it's funny how things are working out, but the buzz on draft day when it was Taylor or Tyler was that Hall was going to be more of an impact player sooner, and Seguin was going to be a more valuable player later. And it sure seems to be that that's the trajectory. And it's not to take anything away from Taylor Hall. I'd take him in a heartbeat. The guy plays hockey the way you want a fullback to play in a goal-line offense in football. But the other side of that is that Tyler Seguin's improvement has been steady and very impressive. The question, if they do move Seguin to center, is who leaves the center position? And the most logical guess right now seems to be that it's going to be David Krejci, because Krejci has a really good track record, having been the leading goal scorer in the playoffs in 2011 during a cup run, and also that he's a salary that's assured, and a team that would trade for him would know where it's going.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jack Edwards. He's the play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network.
The third Boston player to sign recently was Brad Marchand. He signed, I believe, 6 days ago. What were your thoughts on that contract extension?
Good fit. You know, again, it was right there with his value with other players. Marchand is a player that was very disappointed in his playoff performance last year, and I think that if the season is anything close to a full season, you know, if we're talking about 75 or 80 games, that it's not unrealistic to think that he could be a 25 to 30 goal scorer with plenty of other impact, because he has proven to be the kind of guy whose intense competitive nature drives his development as a player. He's a so-called 1-29er. You know, one team loves him, and the other 29 aren't so fond of him. And that's part of his value for the Bruins. But even in that, he has been able to refine his yappiness and his chippiness to the point that it's not getting the team in trouble, that it's able to stimulate the team, annoy the opponent, and not cost the Bruins. Because a few times he's gone over the line, and a couple of times he's gone way over the line.
Jack, there were some rumblings, you know, especially when Marchand had that great run, obviously, in the playoffs 2 seasons ago, and he's obviously come into his own even more so last season, about him possibly being a candidate for the Olympics in Russia. What are your thoughts on that?
Why not? You know, I think it's the mark of the Yzerman selection process since he got involved in that, that they take the best team, and they take guys who can help them in different roles. And that's why Patrice Bergeron was on the team in Vancouver, because are his stats extraordinary? No, but if you watch the guy play, you see so many different ways in which he helps his team win games. And even with a torn groin muscle, he was out there taking key faceoffs for Team Canada in the gold medal game. And, you know, if Marchand is to find his way onto the team, he's got to be able to show that he can contribute in a way that it's going to help Team Canada, which every time it rolls out an Olympic team or a world championship team is usually the most talented team ever assembled.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Jack Edwards. He's the play-by-play man of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. Jack, much like almost every team in professional sports nowadays, the Bruins have been affected by concussions, specifically to Nathan Horton and Mark Savard. Any update on both of their statuses?
Yeah, Savard is going to have his annual physical if and when there's a collective bargaining agreement that the doctor looks at him and says he's not fit to play hockey, so he'll get his money. He does not announce a retirement, which would mean he would walk away from the guaranteed money, and the Bruins would have the option of placing him on long-term injury reserve in order to go above the salary cap wherever it gets pegged in the new CBA. The latest update on Nathan Horton is much more hopeful. He's been cleared for full physical contact. And it was one of the reasons that a lot of people following the Bruins were hoping there would be a full training camp so that Horton could really get a good, thorough test and really get back into the rhythm of being jostled on every single shift and getting slugged a couple of times. Because if you compare the Aaron Rome hit in the Stanley Cup Final, which was a vicious and suspendable hit that Aaron Rome will take to his grave because it turned the series around at that very moment, and the Tom Cestito hit that ended Horton's season last season, those are two completely different hits. And, you know, I mean, the Cestito hit was also from behind. It also was to the head, but the impact wasn't nearly as severe. But the impact of the team, if you will, certainly was more severe because it was a longer-term thing.
Jack, you mentioned earlier Tim Thomas, and you're obviously closer to the team than we are, as close as anybody can be. Where did it all fall apart for him?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, guys. There are two sports stars in Boston lore who stand above everybody else, and it's Ted Williams and Bobby Orr. And depending on who you ask and when you ask them, the answer can go either way as to which is the greatest sports hero. But then there is that second tier of all-time great sports stars that includes people like Phil Esposito and Johnny Busick and Bill Russell. And, you know, probably Russell, if he were more gregarious as a player, would be on that very top tier. But Thomas was very close to being on that second tier if he was not already there, having won 2 Vezinas and a Conn Smythe and having been instrumental in bringing the Stanley Cup to Boston. But I got to tell you, in my 33 years in broadcasting, I have never seen a guy throw away more personal equity with the fans in such a short time as Tim Thomas did between the middle of January 2011 and June of 2011. Nobody would even buy that guy a burger in Boston right now, and he was a guy who was walking on water, about 9 months ago. It's just an astounding thing. And I, you know, talking to members of the team, there are stories about Tim Thomas that he was driving them nuts in different ways. in a number of different scenarios, but, you know, they tolerated it on two fronts. Number one, goalies are different. Mm-hmm. And number two, they just really didn't want to disturb the vibe because the team was still very supportive of everyone, and they sort of forgave the occasional bad behavior because they didn't want to screw up the whole team thing. But a lot of the things that Thomas did in the last 9 months were putting himself above the team in a way that was damaging to the team. And that's when he really started to lose his teammates.
Jack, as you know, the Bruins have a pretty good young defenseman coming down the pipeline in Dougie Hamilton. And as we've heard, there's a chance that some of the guys that didn't play much in the NHL that aren't 20 years old might be able to play in the AHL. What are the Bruins' plans for Dougie Hamilton this year?
They've sent him back to junior, but that's sort of a way station right now. That's the delay and wait and see what the CBA provides mode. You know, he's a guy who's just got stardust all over him, not only because of his ability to play the game, but for his attitude and his intellect. You know, this is a guy who had a 98 average in physics, and you know, is a really smart kid. And to have him possibly paired with Dennis Seidenberg on the second pair, or even maybe get some time with Zdeno Chara on the first pair, people's eyes light up about that. So, you know, maybe they see him in Providence, depending on how the CBA works out. But right now, he's going back to junior.
Jack, we'll let you go on this final question. We started the interview with it. You just mentioned it. It's the CBA. How do you see these CBA negotiations resolving themselves?
You know, I was talking about this last June, and I said my gut tells me they're going to go eyeball to eyeball, and then at the 11th hour, they're finally going to say this is really dumb because the big market teams in the U.S. and all the Canadian teams are just making right. money as mm-hmm. they've never made it before, and it's foolish to walk away from that kind of money. But as we get close now, you know that the preseason games are a huge windfall for the owners. The players don't get paid until the regular season begins. So if a team, for instance, like the Boston Bruins, plays a game at Bell Center against the Montreal Canadiens, that's a huge gate that the owners lose. And if the lockout lasts long enough for the owners to start missing their free paydays, so to speak, those preseason games, then I'm sure there's going to be a faction within ownership that says, well, let's make the players suffer some too, and they're going to miss at least one paycheck, which would be the second week of October, or two paychecks, which would be the end of October. And then it starts getting into schoolyard stupidity. And, you know, my overarching feeling about this is that hockey fans are different from any other kinds of sports fans. And, you know, having worked at ESPN Sports Center, I've covered everything, right? I mean, I really have. I've covered the World Cup of soccer, which is an incredibly passionate thing. But even that gets blown away by the passion of hockey fans day in, day out. And you must commit emotionally to be a hockey fan. That means you're risking your heart. It's like when you tell a girl you're in love with her, you know? I mean, what if she says no? Well, you still have to risk something emotionally. Mm-hmm. But that's what it is to be a day-in, day-out hockey fan. Now, if once every 8 years, you know, your lover gives you nothing for a year, don't we define that as an abusive relationship? You know? I mean, to me, that's something that hockey's really screwing around with, something that's worked darn near perfectly for the last 4 or 5 years at least. And I don't understand why anyone with a hint of sanity wouldn't find a way to get a deal cut before midnight tonight.
You know, Jack, I agree with you with what you're saying about the lockout, and you also described the last relationship that I had with the girl, so.
Unfortunately for hockey fans, there are not more fish in the sea, but you can go to a bar. You know?
Jack Edwards from the New England Sports Network, play-by-play man of the Boston Bruins. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Great to be with you guys again.
Take care, Jack. Thanks very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was pretty clever there.
He's
clever.
Great.
Yeah, Jack is terrific. Yeah. Always speaks. I mean, he's got great passion for the game. Sometimes that gets him into trouble with certain people, but I don't see.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I'd rather have passion than no passion.
Right. Absolutely.
Remember
right.
We met him last year when the Jets beat the Bruins when they were on that winless streak. He's one of the best in the business.
Oh, by far. Yeah. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Jack Edwards of the New England Sports Network. In case you missed any of that interview or the one we conducted earlier with Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press, they will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important life experiences, not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. Contact David Carr of Monopoly Realty at 230-6129. Once again, that's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Gentlemen, a bit of a quick segment. We went a little long with Jack Edwards. Well worth it, certainly. Winnipeg Jets did make a signing earlier today. Agreeing to terms with Spencer Mihacek. He was a restricted free agent. What role do you see Mihacek playing for the Jets this coming season?
Not much of one, really. They have too many guys ahead of him on the list. I mean, he's not going to be one of the top 12 forwards.
You don't think he's one of the top 12?
No, not really, by all the guys that they have on the roster right now, provided Kane signs.
Oh, Drew, Richie is right. I mean, Spencer Mihacek got into 13 games last year, and he did very well. He got some important goals. But on this team, I mean, if you wanted to put a percentage, there's an 80, 90% chance he'll start the year in St. John's. But he's the type of guy that he can play both wings. But he's a guy that'll come in as an extra forward. And even without Evander Kane, he's not a guy that right now at this stage in his career is going to be a top six forward. And that when Kyle Wellwood signed, even though Kyle Wellwood right now slots in on the third line.
You have Wellwood, you have Wheeler, you have Mietinen,
You
have Antropov, Ponikrovsky. And Ponikrovsky is a left winger, but Antropov can play right wing if they're going to put centers.
You don't see Mihacek filling that Tanner
Thorburn's there.
Well, the thing is,
he's a left, he's not a left winger.
It's not just that, though. Spencer Mihacek is a scorer. Tanner Glass is a penalty killer, grinder, guy that can drop the gloves. So Spencer Mihacek is a type of guy. It's good that they got him under contract. He's still very young. He was another Vancouver Giant. But, I mean, he's the guy.
Do you think it's like a backward society that Spencer Mihacek makes more as a right winger than Stephen Harper?
That's a good one. I like that.
That's clever. That's
but
very funny.
No, he's the type of guy that they're going to invest in. They want, you know,
how long have you been thinking about that one for?
I thought of it last night.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. That's very clever.
I'm sitting beside Jean Chrétien, Ross Perot here. you know,
that didn't make any sense.
But no, Spencer Mihacek is an energy guy. He's got a good scoring touch. He's got a good shot off the wing. He can dish the puck. But he's the type of guy that'll play a little bit in the AHL. And when the Jets need to call him up due to an injury, you know, he'll get called up. But by no means should you expect Spencer Mihacek to play a full season in the NHL yet. There's just too many guys in the depth chart. He's not going to replace anybody that's currently penciled in. But it's a good signing. I mean, he earned it with his play last year. And, you know, he's still young. There's lots of room for him to grow in this organization.
We don't know the terms of the contract yet. But, I mean, it's safe to say that they're not going to be anything that, is salary cap ramifications-wise. I got to say, one thing I love... I love the hypocrisy of both sides. They're about to head for this lockout in 10 hours or so, or whatever it is now, a little bit less than that. But they couldn't. Both sides couldn't make deals fast enough yesterday to get all these guys under contract under the terms of the previous CBA. I mean, the hypocrisy just knows no bounds, really. And I say that leveled onto both sides. Another contract signing earlier today. Tyler Ennis re-signs in Buffalo. We haven't spoken about this one yet. 2 years. $5.625 million.
I missed that one because I was.
You were playing softball, yeah. I mean, and nothing gets in the way of you. What position are you playing, by the way?
Center field.
Center field. Look at you there. Yeah. You know.
Anyways,
although I guess on a team of lawyers, it's not like there's a pick of great athletes there.
Fair enough. I love Tyler Ennis's game. Obviously, he had ankle injuries all throughout last year. He's a speedy guy. He's got good hands. He works hard. I think that's going to be a good value contract for the Buffalo Sabres. If he's healthy and plays 82 games, they get good value out of both years of that deal because he has talent, he has work ethic, he has speed. He's one of the more underrated players in the league as far as I'm concerned, so I like that deal for Buffalo.
Yeah, that's 15, good value. A little bit surprised he didn't sign for more years, to be honest with
you. Well, you know, just I think they both want to take a look. I bet you that was more Ennis, Ezzy, than it was Buffalo, but Buffalo wanted to get him on. You know, and the truth is, Pegula will pay you if you play well. So
even if you don't play well, he'll pay you.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, 15 goals, 19 assists last year for the Sabres.
Missed half the season, though.
Yeah, he missed 34 games because of those ankle injuries.
But the ankle injuries, if you watched Buffalo, and I did, and I'm a big Ennis fan, if you watched and play, his ankle injury bothered him when he was playing as well. So that wasn't a season of full health.
Right.
If he's back to himself, he's a guy who can, in my opinion, exceed 60 points in the next 2 years.
Well, they say that, you know, once you're injured, you know, even if you're back playing, you're never healthy until the off season again.
Especially those high ankles. I think it was a high ankle that he had. But
yeah, I mean, exactly. And we'll just wrap up the segment before we go to break. We'll talk about the Milan Lucic one we spoke about with Jack Edwards. 3 years, $18 million, kicks in after the 2012-2013 season, whatever there is of a 2012-2013 season. So $6 million a year for Lucic?
Well, I guess as we said before, Drew, what you're doing is the middle guys are coming up, and I like Milan Lucic a lot, but the middle guys are coming up and creeping up towards the top-paid guys.
Should he be the top-paid forward on this team?
I guess the question is his ceiling. And obviously the contract situations are different. You know, Sagan signing a deal, he'll be the better player.
Right.
Sagan signing a deal before his entry-level deal is even up, and Lucic, I believe, is now on his third contract. So they're two different situations.
Mm-hmm.
Is he overpaid? Yeah, probably a little bit. Well, you know, will he exceed that 60-65 point barrier, making $6 million a year? Yeah, overpaid a bit. But at the same time, you know, his physical presence, what he does, he's a leader in the room. He does a lot of things there that aren't necessarily accounted for in the points on the stat sheet. And I think overall you're going to get a core guy there for 4 more years, you know, this year and then the remaining 3 after that. And then you reevaluate it. He's a big guy. You'd expect to be more durable. And then in 4 years, if he's still that durable, you know, they've had problems with guys like Cam Neely, plays a similar style.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you'll see what happens. So I like that they're not signing him to an 8-year deal or a 6-year deal because he's a big guy who's very physical. While he can hold up by being that big, also the style you play sometimes leads to you.
If you play a more rugged style, right, you get beat up a little bit more and everything else.
So you know, it's a 3-year deal for for 18 total.
Yeah.
Don't have as much of an issue with it if it would be a 6-year deal for 36.
I see.
At this stage.
Yeah, and the key point is that he's a core guy. And there's not a lot of guys that can score potentially 30 goals and fight and hit like he does.
Right.
Those players are very rare.
A lot of signings in the NHL. We'll track them all. We're going to come back. We'll do more of them. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.